This is a new day for New York 19.
Where is the good officers at? If 11 of them is no damn good, we want to know where the good ones at.
I believe the goal is beating Donald Trump.
Watch your
tongue. What do you mean? She just called me names.
So I don't give a f-
she spoke the truth. Whoa, look at that. There's a beaver 5 feet from us. Usually they whack their tails on the water and try to scare you off. That was a pretty brave beaver.
We've learned some tough lessons, and those lessons are we have to hold people accountable.
Hey, it's WAMC Associate News Director Jim Lavoulis. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, I'll speak with U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs Robert Wilkie. The agency was thrust into the headlines a few years ago for long patient wait times at its medical centers and a culture that discouraged whistleblowers. I asked Wilkie, who was sworn in as secretary in July 2018, about how the agency has responded to those issues.
Well, I will let outside organizations grade us, and so I'll fall back on two of the most prominent. The first is the Annals of Internal Medicine, which is run by the Dartmouth Medical School. It said in December that medical care at VA is good or better than in any region of the country. So I'll let the Ivy League stand on that. And in terms of wait times, the Journal of the American Medical Association in January said that our wait times for the most important medical categories, that would be primary care and three medical specialties, oncology, cardiology, and now I've forgotten the third one, are better than any in the private sector. Give you an example. In the largest metropolitan area in Florida, which has the fastest growing veterans population of any state in the country, the wait times for specialty care in Orlando in the private sector are 78 days. The wait times for specialty care surgery at VA are 12 days. So there has been a sea change. There's also been a sea change, Jim, in the way we grade and evaluate ourselves, and Albany is really at the hub of this. It's called High Reliability Organization. I say it as an Air Force officer, as the just culture. It was something that the Air Force instituted at the dawn of the nuclear age, whereby every day there are meetings with staff at all levels of the organization, and they go over what happened the day before. They go over any mistakes, they go over any best practices, and they talk to each other. One of the reasons the United States Air Force, for most of its history during the nuclear era, had no accidents was because this culture was enforced from the top, and because Albany has been on this upward trajectory when it comes to patient service, I wanted to make sure that we enhance that by putting in this new way of doing business at Albany.
And there was concern years ago about the culture in the VA in terms of fear among people who could be punished for being
right,
speaking up about issues.
Right.
What are your thoughts on has the culture changed at the VA?
I think it has. Now, I've been here 9 months, and I have been very impressed by what I've seen. Our customer satisfaction rates are sitting at 90%, but more importantly, our employee satisfaction rates are up. I have in this department more safeguards for people who come forward than any other department in the federal government, including the Department of Defense. We have an Inspector General, we have the Office of the General Counsel, and we have the Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection. We have the mechanisms in place for people to come forward. So I think there is a different culture here at VA. And I would note that just in the last year or so, veterans are voting with their feet. We've seen fewer and fewer requests by veterans to go out into the private sector. 9 times out of 10, they're happy with what we provide them. And I think that's That's important because veterans want to go someplace where people understand the culture and speak the language.
And now the Mission Act, signed by President Trump in 2018, may be the biggest piece of legislation relating to veterans' health care passed in recent years. Secretary Wilkie, what does it do?
So what it does is it says that if a veteran is a certain number of minutes away from a VA facility and we cannot provide a service that that veteran needs within a certain amount of time, and these times and distances are based on what the veteran should be familiar with from the military career, TRICARE and then before that CHAMPUS, then the veteran is given the option to go into the private sector. As I said, just the option. And I'm going to take a step back and tell you what it isn't. This is not libertarian VA. I'm not giving a veteran a card that says veteran and say go out into the private sector. But it is giving that veteran the option. Now, in order to make that work, we have to be good partners with small town community care centers, hospitals, small town doctors. And what we've done is we've taken the disparate community care networks that sprung up after the Choice Act was passed a few years ago and created just one system that's easy to understand. And that those systems are now in place in all but one region of the country, whereby we will start getting checks out to the private sector as soon as that veteran goes into his small-town doctor or small-town pharmacy. So in that sense, Mission gives the veteran more options. But again, it is not an imperative. It is an option for the veteran to choose should he or she desire to go into the private sector.
And Secretary, as you detailed it, some do argue that the Mission Act opens the door to privatization of the VA. Is privatization a goal of the VA for the Trump administration?
Absolutely not. And the president has never said that and never said that on his campaign. And I would note that as the quality of health care at VA continues to rise, and you've certainly seen that in Albany, that veterans will go where they are comfortable, and that is with people who understand what they've been through. But the Mission Act was also very clear, and it said that the veteran's health is at the center of all decisions, not the prerogatives of the institution or the prerogatives of any organization that works with VA. It is the health of that veteran, and that's why that is so important. One thing that you will be seeing in Albany starting on the 6th of June is the creation of what we call a decision support tool. So if that veteran needs a service that we can't provide, he'll sit down with the doctor and the health team, and that doctor will be able to point that veteran to someone in the private sector, and we'll schedule the appointment and go from there. But again, what I have seen in the statistics in the last few years is that fewer and fewer veterans are asking to go into the private sector. The Veterans Administration, which existed before the department, there's always been about 35 to 38% of all veterans who get care in the private sector. We're starting to hit closer to 30% now, which is a sea change in the way we do business.
Some lawmakers have asked the VA to delay the Missions Act rollout, citing problems with information technology. You mentioned June 6th. Is the Mission Act ready to be implemented on June 6th, and will it be implemented?
We are, but as with any good military organization, we have redundancies in place to make sure that on June 6th, if we cannot give the veteran what she needs, she can go to us and we will be able to work the system. But I expect that the IT will be in place on June 6th. I expect it to be just another day at VA, and we will start implementing this this most important legislation. Now, that's June 6th. The other part of this, which is really important to me as the son of a combat soldier from Vietnam, is that we finally close one of the last loops left open by the Vietnam era, and that is we start providing financial support to the family caregivers for those who fought in Vietnam. We've never done that before. This rights that wrong, and that program is scheduled to go online in October. Again, Mission Act is phased in at over different periods of the next year or so.
A VA report from September 2018 found that there were more than 6,000 veteran suicides each year between 2008 and 2016. The report also concluded that in 2016, an adult veteran was 1.5 times more likely to commit suicide than a non-veteran adult. How is the VA addressing the issue of veteran suicide?
Well, Albany has been leading the way. I mean, Albany in 2018 was recognized nationally because of its comprehensive suicide prevention program. Albany was able to reduce the number of veterans who had an inclination to commit this act by about 45%, and that is through collaboration with clergy, VSOs, elected officials in your area, criminal justice professionals, medical professionals. So Albany sort of showed the way. What the president has done is that he has created a national task force on this because it's an issue that goes beyond veterans. We are seeing spikes in suicide across the country. The Washington Post, the day before I testified on the VA budget, did a piece on a small town in Utah where 8 teenagers in the high school in the last few months had taken their lives. As many teenagers died in that one high school as veterans who took their lives on VA campuses this year. So when I look at suicide, I look at it not just at the final, as the final act. I'm looking at a host of issues: opioid addiction, homelessness, financial stability, and more importantly, mental health. I told the New York Times a few weeks ago that we are not even at the Sputnik stage when it comes to getting our arms around mental health issues in this country. And VA hired 3,900 more mental health professionals. We need many more than that. We are working to ensure that we do everything possible to take these numbers down. It is our number one clinical priority.
Democratic Congressman Anthony Brindisi of New York's 22nd District has introduced legislation to address veteran suicide. The Support for Suicide Prevention Coordinators Act would require the Comptroller General of the U.S. to conduct an assessment of the responsibilities, workload, vacancy rates of the Department of Veterans Affairs Suicide Prevention Coordinators. Secretary, do you support this legislation?
I haven't seen it. It's one of 1,000 pieces of legislation that deal with VA that are introduced every year. I have spoken in testimony to the congressman. So I certainly know his sincerity when it comes to that, but there are just so many pieces of legislation that are introduced that I have no way of reviewing all of them until the committees actually choose to act on them.
Secretary, the Pentagon this month released a report on sexual assault in the military. The anonymous survey showed assaults increased in all services and was the highest in the Marine Corps. It found that about 1/4 of all women across the military experience sexual harassment. Is the VA system prepared to handle the possible mental health care or other health care needs that could arise from such assaults?
We certainly do. We screen everyone who comes to VA, not only for mental health issues, but for military sexual trauma. That is part of the new way of looking at these things. We've also, when it comes to claims Americans have made on VA, when it comes to the issue of military sexual trauma, We have reopened cases that were closed, I think going all the way back 5 years. I think that's right. So that we review each of these cases in light of the new emphasis placed on combating this terrible conduct. So we are aware, and I think we've made some incredible strides. But to give you an example of what has happened, and this happens to men and women as well. It's not confined to women, although it is predominantly women. The very face of our VA has changed. When my father was commissioned 2 months before Kennedy was inaugurated, less than 0.5% of the active force was women. When I stepped down as the Undersecretary of Defense last year, more than 17% of the active duty force was women. What's that? What does that mean for VA? It means 10% of those we see are women, and we've had to change the way of doing business. We've had to emphasize women's health and family health in ways that we've never done before. And as I've said in many speeches, and I will say again in New York when I'm up there next week, this is not your granddaddy's VA anymore.
Where in New York are you going to be, Secretary?
I'm going to be in the Bronx and Manhattan. I'm going to be opening a new Fisher House. Then I'm going to be in Manhattan taking a look at their medical center. And I hope to be in upstate New York sometime in the fall or early winter of this year.
Secretary, we talked a little bit about the future of the VA.
Yeah.
There is some talk among the presidential candidates and others about a single-payer national health care system. Have you or the VA given any thought as to how the VA might function if a single-payer system was instituted?
No, I can't spend my time spinning my wheels based on what presidential candidates say, but I will say this. The budget that I presented to the Congress this year was $220 billion. That is the largest budget in the history of this department. Just 10 years ago, our budget was $98 billion, and we had 280,000 employees. The budget that I presented earlier this year calls for 390,000 employees. I'm working with what people would call knowns, as opposed to the unknowns that come with various campaign platforms and promises.
To that point, there are reports saying that there are about 50,000 vacancies in the VA system. Is there a plan to fill those positions?
Well, that's an inaccurate thing. You know, we have 370,000 employees. I've just gotten authorization for 390,000. Those vacancy numbers are unreal in that they look at the gap between the people that we have and the people that we are authorized to carry, and we don't necessarily need all of those people. I'll give you an example with the Department of Defense. The Army has about 600,000 people on active duty. If it has to surge, it can go up to 800,000 people, but it doesn't need those people all at the same time. What I am focusing on, women's health, primary care, and mental health providers. It just so happens that those are the areas that the entire country has a shortage of. So that's my focus. As I mentioned earlier, 3,900 mental health professionals were hired by VA last year. And we're going to continue to focus on those areas where veterans have the greatest need.
Data from the Department of Veterans Affairs shows that in 2016, there were 20.4 million veterans in the U.S. That accounted
right.
for less than 10% of the nation's adult population.
Sure.
And then considering that less than 1% of American adults yep. serve in today's all-volunteer force, do you find it difficult to express veterans' needs to political leaders or a public that has fewer and fewer experiences with the military and service members?
Well, we can talk for hours about my feelings about the second part of your question about so so many parts of the country where we see very little military service. And I think that is an issue that we as a nation need to confront. General Mattis wrote an entire book about that very issue before he became the Secretary of Defense. What I will tell you is the changes that I've seen in my lifetime. My father was gravely wounded in Vietnam, actually in the invasion of Cambodia in 1970. When he recovered and returned to the 82nd Airborne Division, which is America's most decorated combat unit, even in southeastern North Carolina, not a place like Berkeley, California, or maybe Cambridge, Massachusetts, where you would expect a lot of political vitriol when it came to the subject in that era. He wasn't even allowed to wear his uniform off post. I think those days are behind us. I do think there is a recognition on the part of all sides of the political spectrum that service is worthy of recognition and honor. So I don't have that problem at VA. People understand viscerally how important this promise that Mr. Lincoln made in 1865 is. The other part of your question, though, is one that does bother me when I put on my colonel's hat as a member of the Air Force Reserve, in that we don't have as much participation in the armed forces as we should.
And finally, Secretary, I just want to draw upon your experience in the Defense Department. And I want to ask your thoughts on the president's nominee for Defense Secretary, Patrick Shanahan, and your thoughts on his ability to carry out the position.
Yeah. Well, I haven't focused, I have to be honest with you. Once I came here, I did something that all of us in the military are taught. When we leave command, we leave command. And we don't look back. But I'm sure he'll do a fine job. I knew him when I was the undersecretary, and I'm sure the president went through all the deliberations required on that. And I'm sure Shanahan will do a fine job, and confident that he will.
Air Force Reserve Colonel Robert Wilkie is the 10th U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And that's it for this edition of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Until next time, I'm Jim Lavoulis.